Thanks for tuning in. This is episode one of The Occasional Podcast. I'm Brian, your host. We're going to talk about all things hi-fi, get in some interviews, and occasionally have a co-host once in a while. So we're here to have a lot of fun, and we're also here to kind of dig in and get a good snapshot of what's going on in hi-fi, high-end audio, loudspeakers, headphones, a bunch of good stuff. So we have coming up really soon, CES show. It's the first show on the horizon held in Las Vegas every year. Unfortunately, this year, it looks like the two-channel loudspeaker rooms have been minimalized down to only a mere one floor. So the two channels that we're going to go out there and cover will be a little bit on the low end. But there's always a bunch of doohickeys, doodads. I get a ton of emails from PR announcing all kinds of different stuff. So there's some interesting things that go on, but the core of two-channel has somewhat diminished over the years, unfortunately. So we're going to go in, we'll see what's going on, we'll report back, we'll let you know. Already heard some big news coming out of the Sennheiser group. Not too much that I can speak directly to right now, but we'll definitely keep you guys updated with everything that comes out of that audio show. I once asked a fellow writer about his impression of CES and its kind of place where it fits in the landscape of audio, and he thought it was just a collection of cell phones and giant screen TVs. And while those things are there, I do think there are always a couple of fun nuggets that come out of that, the worldwide consumer electronic show for audio. So we'll be there with bells on, ready to kind of get going and get you guys the scoop there. One of the things that I've written several pieces about recently for Part-Time Audiophile is the resurgence of the 80s genre in both, you know, style and, of course, musical influence. It's kind of had a resurgence in the style of musical, new pop music that's come out. There was a video that was recently released that kind of showed how snare drum sounds and percussion from the 80s that were very popular making their way back into the mix in terms of production now. What I thought was really interesting from this week, however, was the old 80s band A-ha, which you may remember had a song called Take On Me, re-released an acoustic version of that particular song. And it was recorded live in Norway for a TV show there. Kind of made the viral rounds in the area, in the stratosphere of social media. And it is quite interesting, to say the least. When they slowed that music down, you can really focus on the lyrics a lot more. And it's not a bad song. I think it's a very interesting listen. If you haven't heard it before, I definitely recommend you check out that video specifically. When you go back to listening to the original version, it just seems way more manic and a little bit overhyped up. And in the case of the acoustic song, it has some very sweet lyrics to it, and he changes up the melody a little bit in that high bridge, in the high part for the hook. Oh, man, it really works out well, I thought. So if you get a chance, give that guy a Google. A-ha performs Take On Me, recorded live in Norway. Today's interview is with Sean Casey of Zoo Audio. Zoo Audio is based out of Ogden, as we kind of go into right away in the interview. They make loudspeakers, cabling, and Sean is someone that I've known for a couple years. He does a lot of the audio shows, and that's where I met him at. He's a very interesting chap. He has a lot of interesting things to say, and he has a very unique kind of design philosophy, I think. What you're going to hear in this episode is actually part one of our two-part interview with him. The initial one kind of focuses on Sean's background, his personal experience getting into audio. And in episode two, which we'll post in a couple of weeks, he talks more about Zoo specifically, where they originated, and kind of where they're going. And just a side note before we spin it, I wanted to let you guys know too that early on in the interview, he mentions the hi-fi murders in Ogden, which is like another thing that Ogden is unfortunately known for. And I had not heard of it previous to this, but I did a little Google search on it. And I have to warn you guys, if you decide to check it out, it is not for the faint of heart. You have to have a pretty strong stomach. But it's out there. The Hi-Fi Murders. Very crazy stuff happened. But yeah, so it was an interesting interview, and he's an interesting guy. So I hope you guys enjoy it. Let's roll it. Sean, you've been in the game for a little bit. You ran the helm at Zoo for quite some time here now.
Under Ray. I mean, Ray was, you know, Ray, Lonnie, Nate, and me, well, at Kimber. But yeah, I mean, I did some stuff at Kimber.
Well, why don't we start there? What? Well, maybe we start even further back. What do you think about... born and raised in Ogden, is that right?
Yeah, born and raised in Ogden. I love Ogden.
You've been in that city your entire life. What is it that kind of have drew you there or kept you there, I guess, in this case, do you think?
Well, everybody loves where they're from, hopefully. I really love where I'm from. So, I grew up on the mountains. So, and our little... redneck community up in the corner of the Wasatch Range, you know, in the winter, everybody pulled resources together. We all skied or snowboarded. In the summertime, it was, you know, dirt biking, backpacking, climbing, caving, paddle sports. If you could do it on the mountains, we were doing that. So none of us, you know, girls and drugs and alcohol weren't all that interesting to our little corner of the world, but we all loved audio, which was a funny part of the equation.
So there are more than a few audio companies based out of there. Is that correct?
Not out of Ogden. Out of Ogden, you have Kimber, you have us, and that's it. Fame, we also had the Hi-Fi Shop. If some of the listeners remember the Hi-Fi Murders. Anyway, that was also crazy stuff that happened in Ogden. But yeah, Kimber and Zoo.
Hold on.
Yeah, that's a whole different topic, man. The Hi-Fi, well, no, let's, the Hi-Fi let, murders.
You're saying they were? Is that you're saying that people were murdered in Ogden and it related to Hi-Fi somehow?
In a Hi-Fi shop, a guy named Ken Larson had a Hi-Fi shop, which it's not what it was. It's still in business, different owners, but it was a super cool shop. And yeah, there was some crazy shit that happened in that shop, after hours. It was weird. That's a whole different podcast, really.
it's like the mystery murder podcast that,
yeah, yeah. It's crazy. It's really, I mean, crazy shit went down.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, it's like the audiophile version of Serial, I guess. We'll have to get into later. But anyways, back to Ogden. So you are graduating high school, graduating college. What kind of education did you kind of invest yourself in early on?
Well, education is a relative thing. I'm a college dropout.
Just like Kanye.
Yeah, I don't know about Kanye. I think he's kind of weird. Personally, weird is not the right word. I think he's delusional, but a lot of people dig his music. Education relative to audio, there's a lot of overlaps and it all audio. So there's two things with audio. One is the, your sensitivity to sounds and music. And that is definitely on the art side of the spectrum. The other interesting thing is in the physics side of the spectrum, and all that is particle related, you know? So, in a nutshell, it's a fluid dynamics or a thermal thing. All basically that all that falls under particle science and, particle behavior, at a molecular level. And I was always interested. In fact, I had three goals in my ABC plan, maybe ABCD plan, since we're talking now and I'm a middle-aged man. Plan A was design and race motorcycles. Plan B was design and race motorcycles and race boats. Plan C was to teach physics at a university and maybe get some hot chicks. And plan D was, well, if none of that works out for me, I can always do audio. So here we are. Really, I tell people, oh, it was my B plan. It was my backup plan. But really, I think it was like my fourth backup plan. So I've been doing audio. You know, you hear when, I love these, people start their stories. Back when I was five, well, sadly, in this case, yeah, back when I was five, you know, I was hooked early with sounds. I loved sounds. And of course, I love tech. I'm playing with all kinds of different tech, motorcycles, boats, audio stuff. And yeah, and then the inspiration of the mountains, you know, I love the mountains. And it, a big source of my education happened in the mountains.
Yeah. Did you go? I heard a rumor that you went on kind of a crazy hike for the eclipse. Can you elaborate on that?
Sure. I mean, this is, so growing up in the mountains, there was a group of guys that I grew up with. And we, you know, just like all your childhood buddies, you have these crazy divergent paths you go back and look at. One of my buddies, Jake, he stayed heavily involved in the vertical world, mountain sports, specifically climbing, big mountain, ice climbing, that stuff. We don't get together too much. One, I can't climb at his level anymore, so I'm not on his A-list for buddies to go backpacking and climbing with. However, they had a team member drop out of their eclipse destination, which was Gannett Peak in the Wind River Range. So they were going to have 2 minutes of full solar eclipse, and they had this plan that they'd been planning on for quite some time. Anyway, I get a call. Hey, dude, we had a guy drop out. You want to go? And of course, I'm going to say yes. Not in the shape that they were in, but definitely, yeah, I can still hang. So yeah, it was beautiful. We hiked back into Gannett Peak. We took it easy. We took a couple of days to acclimatize. We took our fishing rods. I mean, we really enjoyed ourselves. Usually when we were climbing, especially when we were kids, it's like, all right, we get off work at noon on Saturday. We drive to a climbing site or whatever, and we climb our asses off. We sleep somewhere in there, usually in the travel. One person drives, one person sleeping, and then you get back for work on Monday, work or school on Monday, sometimes late, sometimes really late. But so this time, first time, this group of guys, most of us childhood friends, yeah, we took a whole week and did this thing. It was spectacular.
And this is one of those hikes where you got to bring your food with you. I mean, you're not stopping at a Days Inn on the way in, I'm assuming.
No. Well, the Wind Rivers are in the middle of nowhere. They're over by the Tetons, you know, Jackson Hole, but the Wind Rivers are pretty remote. Gannett Peak is arguably the hardest tall point destination in the lower 48. Denali, sure, bigger, better, more remote, but outside of Denali, it's probably the number one most remote, difficult high point in the States. So yeah, I mean, you're 30 miles away from nothing, and that's your base camp. So
and you
it's
have to,
pretty remote.
You catch some fish, but I'm assuming that you pack
it's a lot of
food with you.
It's a lot of freeze dried, and on a week on freeze dried, you know, it wasn't the prettiest. I have a history of taking not the best food selection, always trying to be efficient with what I eat. So looking at calories as opposed to taste. This time I took some good stuff, but still beef stroganoff for supper every night. It sucks. So I was scrounging food from Jake and Mike a few times, but, we ate pretty good relative to the remoteness. We ate good and we caught a bunch of fish too. So we had a big fish fry one night.
You know, the eclipse here wasn't, I had seen one other eclipse before in my life, and it was okay.
No, was it a full eclipse or was it a partial, man?
We just had a real partial. I've seen that before, but I was curious as to what you guys had.
Yeah, totally something else. And I've never seen a full solar either. I never chased him, never really had the desire to chase him. And going into this thing, you know, we're climbing up and I'm looking for the experience. You know, we're with buddies. I like using technical gear anyway. You know, ropes are fun, especially a degree of exposure when you're looking off of something a little dramatic. It's I love that adrenaline rush. So that was what I was looking forward to, not having seen a solar eclipse. So we get up there, we're on the peak, we're like 20 minutes early. And it starts to phase in. It's cool. We're like, yeah, sweet. This is going to be awesome. And it phases in and it's like, 80% eclipse. And it's, yeah, cool. That's about as far as I'd ever seen a solar eclipse. But the difference between once it got to 95% phased in, the light changed quite radically, something that I hadn't felt before. And then when it went dark, it was the coolest thing. So it moved at us from the Teton Range. So we're on top of Gannett Peak. We're looking over the Tetons and we watch this wall of shadow all of a sudden engulf the Teton Range. And then it engulfs us and then it moves out and engulfs the rest of the Wind River Range. And then there's this halo of sunset and the stars come out. And
what? The stars came out?
Yeah, stars come out. You know, you've heard people, the stars are going to come out. Yeah, but the weirdest thing was watching this wall of shadow, almost like dark, but not quite. It was, and it just being enveloped with this. And then that, the light and the temperature change. I mean, we had a 40 degree temperature change. And you know, we knew it was going to get colder, but to feel 40 degrees in a span of like 3 minutes was, that was weird. And then, you know, sharing this experience. So you did a pretty, it was a pretty easy climb. I mean, it wasn't crazy hard and it wasn't that much adrenaline, but it was still, you're out in the middle of nowhere. You're roped up and, you know, you've got ice gear and swinging an axe. And then to have this experience happening, I mean, I look over at Jake. Jake's tearing up. I'm tearing up. Mike's tearing up. Aaron, everybody that we were there with is emotionally affected by this experience in a way that was unanticipated. And it was, I wouldn't say life-changing, but we sat there in silence during that moment and just kind of were out of breath, speechless. And then once it started to phase back in, we all are giggling to ourselves. And Jake's, he's like, dude, I think I have to chase solar eclipses now. That was maybe the coolest thing I've ever seen in my life. Wow. So yeah. So anyway, it's happening again in the Andes here in several more months. And so I don't think I'm going to make it, but I'm sure Jake, he'll probably make it down there sitting on the one of those high Andes and watching another solar eclipse. Maybe I'll be there. We'll see.
I had heard about the temperature change. It's a real shocker. It actually kind of frightens me a little bit. Like, without the sun, dude, we would be toast. Like, total toast. It just reminds you of that. It seems like such an obvious thing, but 40 degree swing, even like 20, that would be insane.
Yeah, it was just everything about it was cool. Amazing.
Was this close to Ogden, or how far do you have to go?
Oh, Wind River's, it's from Ogden to Jackson Hole, which some people are familiar with, the Tetons, the Grand Teton, over by Yellowstone. That's about 5 hours, unless you're on a sport bike all bundled up with your backpack, and then it's like 3.5 hours. And then from there into the last road into the Gannett Peak approach, it's just another half hour. So again, on a motorcycle going, you know, I don't know, more faster than you should, but fast enough that you can stop if an elk jumps out in front of you.
Yeah. So you obviously have a lot of love for the area that you've lived in. And I like that because living in Los Angeles here, unfortunately, to your point earlier, there's some people appreciate what they have back home, but a lot of people have left, you know, left something behind, metaphorically speaking or, you know, geographically speaking. But I think, you know, LA doesn't have quite the same love for the past and the present too. I mean, people like it here, but they don't like, oh, I choose to live here my entire life because of, you know, something as awesome as I appreciate the outdoors, or there's this kind of, you know, connectivity with the land like you seem to have, which I find really, really cool, you know? So you love Ogden, I'm assuming, and you've based your business and your life there. And so yeah. you were kind of saying that your history with Ogden has been, there is some audio there. You said you had Kimber Cables and maybe, I think Spatial Audio is out of there as well, or close to you guys?
They're more Salt Lake City area. I mean, in the Salt Lake, in the greater, so, you know, in Utah, 95% of the population lives on a portion of the Rockies called the Wasatch Mountain Range, or the Front. And so if you include the Front, which you can drive to most any place in 2 hours, that would include Wilson Audio, Kimber. Over the years, there's been lots of, you know, there's been Sonic Weld. There's RBH is out of that greater area. Yeah, there's been a lot of audio companies over the years, decades, that have come up from that. Talon Audio was another one.
You know, and I'm not downplaying your geographical region. I just find it kind of interesting that Utah, in the middle of America, not, you know, no reason in particular, what I can tell, has all this kind of stuff coming out of it. I find that really interesting.
Well, so, I've thought a little bit about that, and only because at one time, being in the mountains, you get, you got a lot of water to work with. So, you know, water skiing and stuff, even if you're just water skiing behind fishing boats, which is typically what we did. But the water ski industry had a very hard nucleus up around Boeing, the Seattle area. A lot of water ski companies coming out of the Boeing area, especially 70s and 80s. I mean, it was like everybody was there. There was two things that happened. One, there was enough water so they could do their thing, and they had a lot of tech, and they had a lot of good money floating around because of Boeing and because of the tech and a few passionate people that got together inoculating all these other people, that sport flourished. I think something might have happened like that in Ogden. It's a very vibrant scene. Musically, Salt Lake City has a lot of bands come through at one. It's, if you're going to the West Coast, you go through Salt Lake City. You can get there other ways, but you have to go, up and around Canada or down and around the Texas route. So most national bands come through Salt Lake City area on their way to, say, Boise or Seattle or down to L.A., San Francisco. So we get a lot of acts. And traditionally, we have gotten a lot of acts. In the 30s, 20s, and 30s, Ogden was a huge jazz town. I mean, we had more jazz happening in Ogden, according to my grandpa, than about any city short of, the Delta region or Chicago. So Ogden was kind of the next thing. So just because of the fact that, it's the home of the Transcontinental Railroad. That's, Ogden is the center, the meeting point. So we've got a lot of this east and west, a lot of migration of people and ideas. And music is hand in hand. People love music. Everybody loves music. And those that don't are either slightly broken or they've been, life's gotten them some other way. They've, they're a slave to their profession or whatever it is, but everybody loves music. So,
truth be told, I think I've only met probably 2 to 3 people who didn't listen to music. And one of those people didn't sleep with a pillow. So I thought that was a little weird too.
I don't correlate those two, but that's funny that you do.
Honestly, in college, there was a gentleman who, he came to college. He was one of the two people he didn't like music. He had no stereo. He had nothing that would make music in his dorm room. But he also, kept all of his possessions in a single box on his desk and slept in he could have had bed sheets and a pillow, but he just slept in a sleeping bag with no pillow. And I was like, I don't know if the no pillow thing is stranger or the no music thing is stranger, but I like a nice pillow. I'm just saying. So you come out of college, you're in Ogden, you're doing this thing, you're doing a lot of reading, I'm assuming. And did you go work for a company straight out of that point, or was it motorcycle stuff first?
There's a lot of facets to my upbringing. I had a lot of exposure to stuff, and I wasn't afraid of things. I never was afraid to go try things, and that cost. I mean, the emergency room knew me by first name on the one side, but I also wasn't afraid of risk on the business side or the knowledge side either. Things weren't taboo. I didn't have taboos. even though I grew up Mormon, I didn't really register. Okay, I was a little afraid of sex and drugs, but otherwise I didn't have taboos. Even before high school, I was making little two-stroke engines go faster. So that's the thermodynamic side of it, which again is analogies can be drawn on the audio. And I was still doing the audio stuff. I was building my own little speakers before high school. Having my mom drive me around, looking at classifieds, finding stuff that I wanted or I needed for my little projects. And word gets out, Wasatch Front, again, there's a limited number of paths. You have to basically, it's a planar living environment. If a kid into audio, you're going to know who Dave Wilson is. You're going to know who Ray Kimber mm-hmm. is. Mm-hmm. So, because everybody is in the same club back then, there wasn't the internet, and you lived in their world. And it was a small, condensed, confined, a beautiful world to grow up in. And the same was true on the power sports side, whether it was boats or motorcycles. Everybody knew everybody, and everybody was willing to help each other out. It was cool. We had a lot of tech, too. So we had, the Air Force Base. We had a lot of rocketry. The greater Area 51 extends up into Ogden. We had some really interesting tech happening, and a large enough expendable income as a community that you could make some stuff happen. I mean, not that any of us were really, we were all blue collar, but yeah, blue collar with the means to make interesting things happen. So I could get support and when I'm mowing lawns or whatever it is to generate money for my other projects, or working on people's outboard engines when I was a kid, making those work or work better. Same was true with motorcycles. You could put money in your pocket and then take that and buy some tweeters from a buddy. I remember, one of the earliest guys that was on my level, a guy named Eric Alexander, who has since done his own thing in the hi-fi world as well. But I remember I'm probably 13 or 14. He has an advertisement in the newspaper Classifieds, and he had a bunch of extra Bose tweeters, little cone tweeters. And I needed some cone tweeters for a project I was doing. So, hey, mom didn't work. I need a ride. We got to go out to Roy. I got to buy some of these things. And she never paid for it, but she was always my chauffeur. So, it was a cool time. I loved the city that I grew up in, even though it was more like a mountain town than a city. It was awesome. We did lots of cool stuff. And so that brings me back to the high school where, my love of physics really took off. I had a really cool teacher that would play us the radio play Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy when we'd walk in, Mr. Taylor, his name. And he developed in me a strong love of the physics side of things, especially electronics and magnetism. Before that, I had tried to study on my own, but the math was over my head, the books were over my head, electronics didn't make as much sense, but field theory made a lot of sense. Richard Feynman was a guy I read early on, the way he presented information, even though I sucked at, I couldn't really read unless it came in textbook form, but how he presented his arguments or ideas, that opened my mind in new ways. So field theory and relative information in field context, so electronics and magnetism, Maxwell's stuff, that all made really easy sense to me, and also related to the thermal side, the motors. So there was a lot of back and forth with different industries, different disciplines that were feeding off each other during that time. I did make it into college. I was, like I said, I grew up Mormon, and I did the whole, my hardcore Mormon family, wonderful family. I did the mission thing, which means, I take 2 years out of my life, and I went to Korea, lived in Korea for 2 years trying to teach people about Mormonism. Mostly I hung out with the Buddhists, sharing ideas and listening to Buddhist bells. They have these beautiful bells, cast bells. The Korean Buddhist monasteries, anybody who's ever been or to Japan knows what I'm talking about. These are really special bells and places that they were in the mountains. I mean, Korea is really mountainous anyway, but I had a good time in Korea, even though maybe I wasn't the best missionary spreading the gospel of Mormonism, I totally enjoyed that time. I get back from that, and you can interrupt anytime you want, Brian, and say, what?
I'm listening. I'm very intrigued. Please continue. Well,
yeah, and you know, I hate talking about yourself. It's really, I hate it. I hate that, but they're interesting stories. I think people that were around me have much more interesting stories, like Ron Grivey from the motorcycle stuff, or Zach Paul, the kid.
You come back from Korea.
Yeah, and I go to college, and I'm entered, and a little bit underwhelmed with my college experience. I had gone several quarters before I went on the mission. And you know, you're signed up as a physics major. Your class sizes are like, if it's 100 people, it's a small class. And it was just some dry professor.
What college was it? Was this BYU?
That's the LDS, the Mormon college is the BYU. And that was definitely off. That was not going to happen for me. That was just too much Mormonism, even though I was Mormon. But our local university is Weber State. And so it was Weber State. They have a really great science program. And the teachers are cool, but like I said, my first couple quarters there, and they were quarters back then. Yep, I am middle-aged man. It was like 300 people. You go to the auditorium for your physics classes or your math classes, and you're like, this is bullshit. You know, really, that's what I thought. So I get back. The first thing I did when I got back off the mission is I signed up for a bunch of upper level division classes and a couple post grad stuff. And you know what? They didn't check, and I got in. And so I spent the next year and a half just taking upper division classes, worrying nothing about any kind of a degree, just learning and just going to the things I was interested in. So it was, philosophy was interesting for a little bit for me. So I'd go to the philosophy classes, take the Shakespearean classes, learn a little bit about literature, which I totally sucked at and still totally suck at literature. And then my experience in college went from pretty shitty to, yeah, this is fantastic. I love this. I ended up dropping out after about 3 years. I get a call from Zach Paul, and Zach is a guy who, in my little neighborhood that I grew up in, when you're 8, you learn how to run from the cops on your dirt bike. That was just what everybody did in our community. Well, my mentor to learn, So when I was 8, I get baptized as a Mormon, and I learn how to run from cops on my dirt bike. It might have been 7 that I learned. I might have learned how to run from cops before I turned 8, but it was in the same basic, and it makes for a better story to group those into the same week anyway. But so Zach showed me how to run from cops and what to do on my little Z50 Honda 2-speed. We could outrun the cops in their cars, and they also had some motorcycles that they would try to catch us on, and we could totally get away because, yeah, we were just having too much fun to get caught. So Zach calls me up on this is probably in the early 90s. He calls me, hey, Sean, I'm down here at ATK Motorcycles working with Ron Grivey, who's a famous name in the motorcycle world, especially in the 80s and 90s. And we want you to come join us. And I said, well, what are we talking about? He says, well, we really need a lot of help in the product, sure. And we need to help selling the stuff. And you're an enthusiast. You can talk. You can't spell where ship, but that's okay. You're not going to be writing anything. Says, oh, yeah, sign me up. So I drop out of college and start working for Zach down at ATK. And it didn't really work out, but it got me in a different position. I was thinking about life and my future in a different way.
Yeah.
And so, after a year, that didn't work.
I always kind of feel like that first job opens your mind a little bit more to what execution looks like rather than just education, you know?
Yeah, and it was the first job I had actually had. Before that, it was always self-employed stuff. You know, so my dad had a store in the 70s, before this late 70s recession. He had a sporting goods and a marine shop. And so I grew up around sporting goods, hunting, fishing, ball sports, as well as the marine side. And so since I could fix these outboards. He gave me a job real quick. He was selling Evinrude outboards, and so I wasn't their head mechanic, of course, but I could rebuild a carburetor faster than anybody else in the area. So I was the kid that was, you know, fixed, given these tune-ups and making these boats run again. And then it evolved into the bass boat craze. And so but I was always on my schedule, my terms. And the same with audio. I was working on audio. If Ray Kimber, during the 70s and 80s, well, 80s, Ray started in 78. In the 80s, Ray was also doing discotheques, and these local discotheques up at Utah State University or around Weber State or down in Salt Lake, he would put these discotheques in. And they wouldn't buy a repair contract, of course, because they were all tight asses. And so something would break. They heard of this crazy kid that was, his mom would drop him off and he wouldn't charge him unless he fixed it. And he was, you know, like a quarter of the price. So again, self-employed, doing my thing. But when I was working for somebody, ATK, yeah, that was my first real job, early 20s, first real job working for somebody else. And it didn't really agree with me.
Where do you kind of feel like you get your personal drive from? I feel like, you know, you have your own company, you get out here, you do things, you're motivated. Where does that kind of come from in you, do you think? Because if school wasn't your thing, in the professional realm, you're not just settling for the everyday existence. You've pursued something on your own terms. Where do you get that kind of entrepreneurship combined with drive from in your mind, do you think?
I have no idea, really. I don't. The environment I grew up in, you had to think on your feet. If you had a dirt bike, you learned to run from cops every day. If you were on the mountain and you were tied up in a rope, these were some of the early days of sport climbing in the United States, the 80s. I mean, not really early days, but they weren't real mature. So we were learning as we were going. And so we knew our lives were on the line. So you'd rope up and you had to have your brain on. And you also had a goal, like, I'm going to do this thing. I'm going to climb that route, or I'm going to put myself on that peak on this other route that nobody's done or whatever. So the mountain experience plays into it. Maybe adrenaline deficit. I need these fixes, and you can get these fixes through music, dirt bikes, or power sports. You can get them through other, lots of ways to get it. But how I grew up, learning how to make choices and making the choices based on your desires was just how my brain evolved. I mean, that was the experience I had to work within. So yeah,
You like to tap into survival instincts.
Something. Yeah. And I think audio is part of that. I need adrenaline, and you can get that a lot of ways. Audio is one of the ways you can get that experience. You also, but there's, I mean, this, the philosophy side, that's a whole nother. Yeah. That's something we could talk about too for hours, probably best over whiskey and cigars, but we've done that once. Yeah.
We've done that once before. We have, Sean and I have shared a whiskey before. And during the course of those whiskeys, there was one thing that you said to me that I have not forgotten, and I kind of think about it when we had been going down a rabbit hole of sorts, I think, in terms of, you know, reviews and listening and this kind of thing. You had mentioned a particular philosophy or experience that you thought would help you hone your listening skills, and it involved some of the same kind of themes we're talking about, and that is going out into a secluded thing, secluded area. Obviously, from your experience, the mountains is probably what you're referring to, and kind of getting back to nature and letting yourself be not only enveloped by your environment to hone your senses, but to tap into some of those primal instincts and survival skills by initiating some type of fear mechanism within yourself that triggers that, and that will help you hone your senses. Now, you maybe didn't quite lay it out
Not like quite
that.
Like that. Not quite like that.
I put some thought into this. So
yeah. Not about finding, connecting with nature. All that's just bullshit, I think, honestly. I mean, because I grew up in nature. So it was just, you live in it. Even if you live in the city, you're still surrounded by whatever is nature. But going out and being afraid, however you become afraid and experiencing that with a point to experience it, you can learn new ways of dealing with yourself, new ways of thinking, seeing problems or possibilities or realities in new ways. And so, yeah, going out alone in the mountains overnight is a really easy way to elevate your senses and elevate your survival. So getting your conscious, your reasonable brain, your reason, and your subconscious, your primitive, to get those things to communicate in real time at the same time and try to tap into both. Yeah. Fear.
I think on the
surface,
is
a very useful tool.
The idea might seem kind of out there for the everyday guy who commutes to work or woman who commutes to work and sits in front of the computer screen. But I have put a lot of thought into that, and I feel like for those individuals, there is an acorn there. There's a little nut, I think, of going out and really pushing yourself in order to experience your senses a little more deeply. And that is kind of the farthest thing from sitting in the basement listening to Dark Side of the Moon there is, where you're completely safe. It's almost the polar opposite, where you're going back into the womb of sorts to find your comfort zone. But that's why I like that kind of idea, because it is the polar opposite of that experience.
If you go into it like looking at it from a Carl Jung perspective and you want to know more about yourself, you can do that through music or through your, you know, lucid moments or REM states. However, I mean, again, we're talking about things that I don't really know. But I do think that you can have transcendent experiences sitting in your basement, listening to Dark Side of the Moon, which I have, and still be able to tap into new ways of hearing things or seeing things or thinking about life or yourself. So it doesn't require fear. It doesn't require adrenaline, but I think the mere act of wanting to know more or explore things is essential.
Yeah. Yeah. Discovery. And this is personal discovery, not just discovering new things, but discovering new things about yourself, putting yourself in new scenarios that you might not be totally comfortable with in order to derive closer sense of your own being. And yeah, I think in a way that's unique, it's different, and not something you would ever hear or find at an audio show, which is when we had this conversation, which I thought was real beauty.